Hello, and welcome to The Summit, the podcast where we bring you the knowledge and insights from industry leaders and professionals. No fluff, no double-digit overnight growth schemes, just the truth from business. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer, and I'm on a mission to find secrets to success in business. We're having real conversations with experienced professionals to get you real answers on how to elevate yourself, your company, and your career. Today's guest joining us on The Summit is a friend and second-time guest, or third-time now, Neil Benedict. Neil, how are you today?
Good, Kyle. I don't remember how many times I've been here either, but every time's been exciting and fun and glad to be back.
Yeah, we never are short of things to talk about, are we?
Never.
For those of you who don't know Neil is the president and owner of Silver Brick Sales Solutions based in Houston, Texas. He has been working as a fractional CRO or VP of sales on demand for the last 5 years in his own company. Recently got started in the Sandler training business and has his own practice teaching sales teams how to take it to the next level. So if your company is, I guess, looking for sales help, whether it's on the front lines or at the management level, you're kind of the guy to see. Is that about right, Neil?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that I can help you with if you're struggling with sales. I still consider myself a recovering corporate head of sales. I've held a lot of roles and coached a lot of salespeople and spent a lot of time on the front lines myself early in my career. And I just love the profession. I love talking shop. So if I can't help you, I bet you I know someone who can.
That's great. Well, we're excited to have you here again today. And one of the things we're actually going to talk about, or the topic for today's discussion, is what is going on in sales post-COVID-19? How is sales going to change? I mean, you said you'd like talking shop and seeing what's going on. So what is the future of sales, selling, and what's going on? So what are you seeing out there with the folks that you're working with who are coming, you know, we're no longer being stuck at home as the world's opening up? What's changed? What changed in the last 8 weeks?
Anything? Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think clearly a lot has changed, but I think some of the things that people have assumed would have changed haven't, right? So I think maybe what we need to talk about first and foremost is some of the things that have been changing. And clearly, nobody has been successful in getting back to the norm of getting face-to-face meetings from a selling standpoint. It's very, very rare in talking to our clients where we've had the opportunity to see them now back to a normal sales engagement where they're spending time in the prospect's office. Almost never has that been taking place in the last few weeks. So that's a dramatic shift when it comes to selling. Most sales professionals have made a living, and a very good living, out of the process of establishing that rapport, getting in front of those people, having lunches, dinners, extended meetings with them, trying to understand problems that impact people, not only professionally, but personally. And right now, a lot of that interaction has either gone online or quite honestly dried up, because people don't necessarily know how to have that interaction when they're not sitting in front of people. They're so accustomed to the interaction that takes place when I'm reading your body language, when I'm looking into your eyes, when I'm watching how you're interacting with the words that I'm saying. And I don't know necessarily the best way to duplicate that level of communication using these digital tools. And that has changed dramatically for a lot of salespeople at this point. And I think quite a bit of them are struggling with figuring out, how do I get better at doing this in a remote way? And I think that's what a lot of salespeople are thinking through, and a lot of organizations are struggling with when they think about, is there going to be a time when things will open back up to the point that they were before? And I'm not saying that's never going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen anytime in the next 3 to 6 months.
Do you think that's okay? So let's look at it at face value. So the landscape's changed. Premise sales, field sales, face-to-face sales is at least temporarily in timeout. And so organizations, guys with huge quotas, right? The guys that are going door to door or visiting businesses, kissing babies, shaking hands like you're talking about, these aren't guys that are carrying $20,000 a month quotas. These guys that are carrying multi-million dollars a year in quota usually. I mean, isn't that kind of fair? It's not a low producer's position.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think clearly, depending on the nature of the products you're selling, it's very expensive to have a person out in the field making calls on customers, having an expense account. Those things are not trivial expenses for any company to bear. So typically, these people tend to be in roles, to your point, where there's a fairly healthy amount of revenue that's being generated, and, you know, quite honestly, a healthy amount of profit that's being generated by them as individuals. And if those individuals can't be successful in doing the things that they were doing prior, what do they need to do to be successful in doing the things that are going to be critical in today's environment? And I think that's a big question mark for both the individuals executing that role and the management levels responsible for making sure that those roles are executed well.
So if you're a guy who's used to, or a gal, if you're a closer who's used to bringing in business over golf outings or, you know, drinks or deep dive face-to-face whiteboard sessions, working in the consultative approach, or even working with engineering teams or in the field, what are the real challenges that you face? I mean, you talked about you got to adapt to what's going on, but what are some of the challenges that they're going to just naturally run into that we wouldn't necessarily think about before?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the sales that happened, you know, previously, and, you know, granted, there are a lot of salespeople out there. There probably are less sales professionals, but a lot of what was happening prior to COVID-19 is just by the fact that you had that relationship and that you were in front of those individuals and you made it easy for them to buy from you, you garnered a certain amount of support from those organizations. You were getting a certain amount of their business, probably not all of it, but you were getting a certain amount of their business for simply doing what we call the milk run, going out, being in front of those people, catching them at the right time, at the right moment when they needed the product or the service that you were selling. And it became almost rote in the sense of that company is going to give me a certain amount of business every year. Now, that probably hasn't stopped entirely. You know, I can still pick up the phone as the sales rep for, you know, a Chocolate Bayou facility in South Houston, talk to the maintenance manager, ask them how they're doing. They won't forget who I am. They won't forget what relationship we had. So there's certainly opportunity for us to continue to sell in there, and that relationship hasn't dried up entirely. However, my competitors now can call into that account, you know, easier. They're in front of their desk and in front of their in their workspace more frequently. They're taking less in-person sales calls, but that doesn't mean that they won't be getting more direct calls from my competitors. So all of a sudden, my ability to be in the right place at the right time, you know, just using that relationship has become more challenged because all of my competitors are going to be at the right place at the right time as well, because there's lower barriers to entry for me getting in front of that person, because I'm getting in front of them remotely now. I'm getting in front of them via the phone. I'm getting in front of them via my Zoom account. I'm getting in front of them, you know, using LinkedIn. I'm using all sorts of tools now where I can get into places where I maybe wouldn't have been able to get in before, because I don't need to have that relationship in order to get the front door opened any longer. So again, I think what people what sales reps need to think through is, you know, how do you continue to build on relationships where, again, you can't do the norms of social interaction, regular engagement, and how do you find customers that, again, you can add value to, that you can bring insights to on a regular basis without necessarily having to sit in front of them to be able to do that. And I think those are really the shifts that people are thinking through right now. And they're all, and businesses are thinking through, do I still get the same amount of benefit from this type of salesperson who is used to entering facilities, used to being able to get past the physical gatekeeper, used to being able to get past and create relationships once they step foot into that building? Is that the same type of salesperson I'm going to need tomorrow, even though they were bringing value 3 months ago? Will they bring the same level of value 3 months from now? And I think that's, again, the consideration that organizations are also going through when it comes to, you know, fielding more costly, typically outside sales reps versus maybe moving more to an inside sales model.
Well, it's interesting because I think at least in my history with sales, it is definitely a different process in selling face-to-face versus selling over the phone. But in software, it's kind of irrelevant. For the most part, somebody going in and being able to shake hands isn't as important as maybe it is for other industries. What industries do you think right now or sales reps that are outside sales reps are really having to look hard at it? Is it software? Is it everybody? Or are there specific industries and or disciplines where field sales or outside sales guys are taking a really hard look at how much value can I bring?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly does lend itself more specifically to certain industries. I think, you know, across the board, everybody is facing this dilemma and considering what their options are at this point. And if they're not, they need to be considering what those options are. I do think if you consider something like medical devices are one of those things where if I'm selling stents to a heart surgeon and I need to be able to demonstrate the latest technology and I need to be in the surgery while they're using that stent, because that's what a lot of these medical sales professionals ultimately do. They give you not only the product, but they give you guidance and support as you as a physician use my newest technology, for an example. So I think those outside sales reps would be very difficult to replace and very difficult to move into a different model, right? Because those things are so hands-on. But, you know, if you look at all the data that was being accumulated by companies prior to COVID-19, and they asked decision makers, how do you prefer to interact with a salesperson? 70% of the time, the person responding to that, the decision maker said, I would prefer to interact with the salesperson remotely than sitting with that salesperson in person. So it was already a trend that was well on its way to being a shift in the overall way that salespeople are interacting. Not to say that outside sales reps are ever going away entirely, but decision makers have less time today to be meeting with salespeople. Decision makers have less time to meet with people that don't have a clear agenda and a clear set of things they're bringing to that person to solve problems. And generally speaking, they've been less and less reticent over time, even if there was a carrot associated with that meaning you're going to get a free lunch. They've been less incentivized and less interested in attending these face-to-face meetings with salespeople. And again, that's not a new trend. That was happening well prior to COVID-19. So the really successful salespeople, the people that have been on this trend for a while, the people who have understood it and realize it, have continually honed their skills on the phone. They continually hone their skills using remote selling tools. You know, they're trialing tools like, you know, I know you're not a huge fan of Connect and Sell, but something like a Connect and Sell platform. So they've been, if you look at the sales stack today, the sales stack looks the way it looks for a reason, because people are asking for better ways and more technically advanced ways to engage with people from a selling standpoint. In the tech industry's responded. They're building, I mean, I get calls from people every week from companies I've never heard of before that have a new product in the tech sales stack and are looking to make a name for themselves as a new technology to help salespeople sell better. So it's not a trend that was created by COVID-19. It's really been one that's been exacerbated by COVID-19.
You know, there's a couple of things that you hit on there that I think are hidden, and it's interesting to me. And let me provide a little bit of context. The part that's interesting to me is what happens to salespeople that are really good face to face, belly to belly, elbow to elbow, when you put them on a phone, when you put them in on a Zoom, when you remove them from the outside experience. It's a totally different set of skills. But interestingly enough, when you get into the doing stuff remotely, all of a sudden your space gets really busy really fast. And what I mean by that is, if you're a senior sales, outside salesperson, I'm sure you have some level of a Rolodex. But when you go to move to only the phone, you're now competing on a phone message or an email message with somebody who's fresh out of college. Somebody gave them a list through Connect and Sell, and now they're blowing the same person up. And you have to figure out how to differentiate yourself and stand apart without being able to do stuff face-to-face, elbow-to-elbow. I have a close friend who's really high up, top 10 key people at a large credit card company here in the United States. And one of the things that this executive told me and he shared with me was, is that it's really hard when you're looking for something, like you have a specific problem you're trying to solve, to separate the truth tellers from the pretenders. Talking to that sales rep, that outside guy, how would you counsel him, or what would the things be that he needed to look at in order to develop the skills to continue to stand out while working remote? And how would he get in front of executives that he's used to walking in and shaking hands or getting past gatekeepers, you know, senior type decision makers, even your doctor? How do they need to change and behave differently, at least for the next 6 months, as they try and continue to hit their quota?
Yeah. And I think those are really important distinctions between, you know, the inside rep and the outside rep. And I also think that there's some distinction there between, you know, the sales profession and people who treat it more like a hobby and don't treat it as if it needs to be refined and it needs to be fine-tuned and it needs to be continually improved upon. So really good salespeople, whether they know it or not, they've always been following some process in order to do what they do well. So almost no salesperson who is out there winging it from day to day is actually achieving their goals. And a lot of salespeople are doing that. And that's why, if you look at the most recent statistics that are being published, during COVID-19, it used to be where at least 50% of sales reps were missing their number, missing their quota. That number's jumped up in what I consider a fairly dramatic way, where that number has moved to about 60, 61, 62, 63% of sales reps are now missing their number. So there is a huge gap between, you know, performance expectations and performance delivered at this point from sales organizations. And so, but if you look at the really good set of sales reps, what they're focused on is refining their process. And that process isn't the same across the board. Many of them use processes that they've developed unique to themselves over the course of their selling career. And other of them have jumped on board to a process like Sandler, for an example, a process that they can use effectively, that they can continue to learn, you know, from people like us, so that it improves their overall selling process, right? But most good salespeople have really focused on the idea that it really isn't about me, right? They've realized fairly early on in their selling career that nobody cares about them, right? Nobody cares about what they do. Nobody cares about what their product does. Nobody cares about what their company does. I mean, I'm not a Simon Sinek critic, but I always look at Simon Sinek and say, Simon, nobody cares about your why, right? I get what you're talking about. I get that at some point it might be useful to explain why you do what you do. But when you're a sales rep, if you go in and you start talking to a prospect about why you do what you do, you know, the prospect's going to glaze over and say, great. You know, that's good for you. You know, and they generally don't care, right? So we as salespeople need to make sure that we understand that the client is all that matters, right? And sometimes that client has a real problem and pain that needs to be solved. And sometimes that is an immediate pain, or it's a past pain that they feel is going to resurface itself, or it's a future pain that they can look out into the future and say, if I don't do something about this, I'm not feeling it right now, but I sure feel like I'm going to be feeling it in a little while down the road. So it's some level of problem you're solving, or there is a certain set of outcomes that they are trying to achieve in their business. And that certain set of outcomes are well defined. They're documented. People in the rest in the organization understand them. They're being held accountable to them. And there's a lot of pressure to make sure that those outcomes get accomplished, right? And if I can go to a, and sometimes I don't know how to accomplish those outcomes. I signed up for things as a senior executive. I have no idea how I'm going to get there, right? And in some cases, it makes sense for a salesperson to show me how I'm going to get there, right? To help me figure that out. And so the two aspects of really focus that a salesperson needs to have in their mind, whether you're going to stay outside or move inside, is I really need to understand my client's problems or the outcomes that they have that are critical to them, that are important to them, that they can articulate, and that they can actually use my help to try and achieve. And so if you can't find a pain or a problem, and if you don't know what the company or the individual's outcomes are related to how your product or service can support that, then you're probably not doing a great job as a sales rep, whether you're inside or outside. So, you know, refocusing your efforts on truly understanding. I mean, when you're on the phone, you lose 50% of the communication, you know, the 50% of that communication interaction, right? Body language is over 50%. And yeah, I can see you on Zoom, but quite honestly, it doesn't give me the same ability. There's the delay that's there. There's the, I'm focused really on the upper one third of your body, your head movement. So again, there's some indicators there, but the way I communicate with you now that I'm on the phone with you or I'm on Zoom with you still doesn't give me the complete view for me to be able to use the same skills and techniques I've developed over time from a communication standpoint. So I have to adjust that as well. So, I mean, I guess to make a short answer, they've got to adjust in regards to how they find out what the client's needs are, because no longer am I going to be able to present a great demo. No longer am I going to be able to have a really slick PowerPoint deck. No longer am I going to be able to do a song and dance in a boardroom and convince people that I have the right solution. I really have to talk more about their pains, their problems, their objectives, their outcomes to be able to be successful in the new world of selling. And the razzle dazzle that, you know, it, and again, I don't mean we're misleading people, but the razzle dazzle that we typically can perform as salespeople just is a lot relevant, less relevant today than it was, you know, 2 or 3 months ago.
All right. So that's the person, but what about the company? I mean, the shifting, whether it's an executive level, looking at how you're now managing your outside team, or it's changing the mechanics of the team. How does a company begin shifting, whether it's metrics or quotas or process, in order to support this transition, regardless of whether they're going to keep the position or keep the function of an outside rep or, you know, face-to-face rep post everything kind of going back to we can move freely about the country. How does the company set this person up and themselves up for success during this transition time?
Yeah. Well, I think we're at a really great time for actually sales organizations and companies in general who are looking at selling and how to improve that overall process in their company. So inside sales organizations typically, excuse me, are much, much more metrics driven than outside sales organizations typically are. And, you know, there are reasons for that that are quite practical in nature. And there are also reasons that, you know, because, excuse me, there are reasons, again, that are quite practical in nature and, you know, that lend itself to being more metrics driven. When I'm sitting in an office and I've got a whiteboard and I've got computer software and I've got the latest, tracking devices available to me, it's easier for me to gauge how many sales calls my team is making. It's easy for me to record those calls and understand how well they're being executed. It's easy for me to look up on the big board or the monitor to see where, you know, Neil is versus where Kyle is on any given moment. So we as inside sales organizations tend to be more metrics driven in general because it's easier for us to do that. So it's a great time if you're not currently a metrics-driven sales organization to become a metrics-driven sales organization, right? How do I look at, you know, moving those people inside? Because, you know, A, it's important for me to be able to do that at this point so they can have more conversations more effectively. But now all of a sudden, I've got software at my disposal. I've got four. They're somewhat constrained behind four walls so I can have regular conversations with them. You know, my phone system is set up so that it will track all these metrics specifically. So it's a great time if you're thinking, hey, I should have been a metrics-driven sales organization before, but my outside sales reps were kind of really hard to nail down. You know, how do you know exactly what's happening in an 8-hour day with an outside sales rep, you know, that only enters their CRM data on Friday at 5 p.m., right? You really don't know proactively what's going on. And, you know, now you can be set those metrics. Now you can know what metrics are going to work for your organization. You can change those metrics on a daily basis to say, hey, we're getting a lot of traction on LinkedIn right now. Hey guys, let's do a 2-hour LinkedIn blitz today and shift our focus on LinkedIn, hit this topic hard and see if we can't generate leads in that capacity. Our inside sales team can make that level of change and shift by us monitoring those metrics on a daily basis and making us more successful that way, which is just extremely difficult to do when you've got an outside sales role and you've got primarily outside salespeople. So again, I think as an organization, I want to be thinking about if I bring people in the operation indoors or whether they transition to an inside sales role entirely, what do I want to be measuring? How am I going to gauge their performance? What tools do I need to make sure that their performance is contributing to the bottom line? And how do I make sure that the investment I'm making in inside versus outside is the one I need to be making? So, but it's a great time because you can track almost everything when you're doing inside sales, right? You can track every activity. You can shift those activities on a fly. You can be very, very flexible when it comes to the number of calls and the number of emails that you're doing every day. Sequencing becomes really important. I mean, all these things that really are really cool things that, you know, marketing teams like you help us work on. We can do all those things really, really well and measure their impact almost immediately versus the way we would do it in outside sales, where most of the time we're measuring the lagging indicator, which is how many sales we brought in over the course of that month, over the course of that quarter. So organizations now have the ability and the responsibility to become sales driven or metrics driven much more than they ever have been.
So let's talk about metrics driven for just a minute. I mean, you talk about organizations that are in different phases. There are those that are very mature in their metrics, but maybe those metrics are predominantly mature just because they're inside sales. Mm-hmm. The numbers that you would hold an inside sales team to probably are different than an outside sales team. You have groups that are experimenting or have been trying to set up systems. And then you have groups that are just like, hey, just deliver a number. I don't care what you do as long as the number comes in. If you're in the latter two, how do you begin the journey of becoming a metrics-driven organization? Where do you pick what the inputs should be? How do you identify what the behaviors or activities are that you begin to measure so that you get the output that you want? What's that process look like for an organization?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it starts with understanding how, you know, you certainly organizations need to know what the outcome of that activity needs to look like, right? And that usually revolves around, you know, to your point, revenue generation, increased profits, number of new customers brought into the organization. If I'm a SaaS-driven company, reoccurring revenue month to month. They're looking at things like lifetime acquisition value of certain customers. So you want to make sure that whatever is driving your business metrics forward, that you have those really well defined, right? Because I see a lot of sales organizations that are functioning without even understanding what their outcomes need to look like, right? They say, yeah, sell more today than you sold tomorrow, but that really isn't an outcome, right? That's just a, you know, if we get there, great, you know, it's a hope. So defining your outcomes first is really important. Then when you define your outcomes, you can back into a lot of the things that are going to drive those outcomes. So for an example, if I'm a organization and I've got five inside sales reps and I need to generate $1 million a month in revenue, then, you know, I can start, you know, if I haven't done this before, I can start by saying, okay, well, that's $200,000 per rep per month of revenue. You know, if I'm an organization who understands and has the ability to measure, you know, the sales process, I can say, well, how many meetings does it take, for an example, to get somebody into an opportunity stage? And how many opportunities do I need in order to close one sale? And I can back into those metrics, right? I can back into them and say, you know, if it takes me 100 outbound calls to set 5 meetings, and I need five meetings for every one opportunity, and I need 10 opportunities for every one sale, that I can back into all those metrics and start to track those and apply the right metrics to the right people to make sure that those metrics are, you know, impacting the end result. So if I know what my end result is, and a lot of organizations, however, haven't really tracked this before and don't know what those metrics are. So you're going to have to start tracking, right? You're going to have a plan in place fairly early on to start tracking basics, right? Tracking how many opportunities are coming into my funnel. How do I create those? How are those opportunities being created? How many of those opportunities are moving to into the funnel so that they ultimately are being closed? You know, so once you start tracking those metrics, you can start to apply those to the individuals on your team. But the point is, if you don't know what they are, then you're going to have to draw a line in the sand. You're going to have to make some assumptions. You're going to have to start tracking them. And then you adjust your assumptions as you learn what the real data looks like, right? And that's ultimately what we want to be doing. So one of the things we often help clients understand is, how do we get that process started? How do we, if we've never tracked metrics before, where do we build the systems and the structure to be able to do that? When we start measuring, how do we adjust those to make sure that sales rep A and sales rep B don't necessarily have the same metrics because they're not robots and they don't perform at the same levels? So how do we customize metrics to individual salespeople to make sure that those metrics reflect their capabilities, their skills, their contribution to the organization? And again, we help organizations define that and then put those plans in place to be able to do it. But it's non-trivial, right? You have to start tracking the data first.
No, you're absolutely right. It's non-trivial. I mean, it's definitely a big effort. I know that, you know, my last corporate role, the first 8 weeks that I was with the organization, we just spent time deep diving into the lead production, the opportunity in each state for territory assignment to make sure that the reps and the territories were aligned to quota, because you had some people that were in very rich, highly high commerce areas and lots of population. And so it was much easier for them to hit their quota than somebody that was like in, I don't know, Montana, right? Where there's not as much population. And so I think one of the things that we learned during that time, or at least I learned during that time, is it's really, really important that when you go in, you're right. You want to know what you're looking for from an outcome standpoint, but that you shouldn't treat each rep and or inside or outside, you shouldn't treat them as the same and just take your number, call it $1 million and divide it by 5. There may be somebody that is in, there's somebody that's serving Iceland in your inside sales rep team, and they can't carry a quota of $200,000 for that particular month. Using your example. So I think it's really important to have those, exercise those muscles inside your business of critical thinking and really understanding what you're trying to accomplish with your sales team.
Yeah, I would agree. I come into organizations a lot of time, and to your point, they haven't done any real metrics tracking. And so we're trying to set up a process of allocating quotas and allocating territories and allocating, you know, the actual activity metrics that they need to set up in order to achieve their goals. And we have to start somewhere. You know, there's, you know, you've got to start somewhere. So I have to explain to the reps that, you know, as we get started, this probably isn't the right quota for you. These probably aren't the exact right metrics for you. However, the reason why we're assigning them in the way that we are is because we have no historic data to draw upon, and we have no real understanding of the performance levels of these individual territories. So we are going to begin and give you guys a relatively consistent level of requirements. And then as we figure this out, we're going to adjust this as we go, right? We're going to understand it. We're going to evaluate it. These are not going to be your numbers probably 6 months from now, because we're going to know a whole lot more in 6 months than we know today, right? And so to your point, but it's also problematic because we can get lazy with the metrics, right? It's easy for us in management to get lazy with the metrics where, you know, yeah, we've got a $10 million quota that came down from corporate. I've got five guys on my team. Each of those guys needs a $2 million quota, right? We get lazy because either we don't know how to effectively assign that quota, or we feel like we don't have the time to go through the process that it really takes to review it and assign it effectively. So it's not uncommon that we as sales managers take a bit of a lazy approach to assigning those metrics, to your point. And you really don't want to do that because, you know, it's going to impact performance, impact morale, and potentially just cause people to spin their wheels in a way that's more frustrating than anything else.
Wait. Somebody in sales taking the path of least resistance? Never.
Yeah, right. We will do that if you let us.
I don't think it's exclusive to sales, by the way. I think it's just human nature. Last question before we wrap up today. If you're a senior leader in corporate America, no matter the size of your business, 5 sales reps all the way up to 500, what hacks or advice would you provide for them to navigate outside sales, you know, 1 or 2 points between now and say Christmas? What are the things that would be critical to being successful?
Yeah, I think the first thing you're going to need to think about and evaluate is the market I'm playing in, are they going to come back? Am I going to be able to engage people face to face? And I know nobody has the full answer to that, but you're going to have to make some general assumptions to the fact that, you know, am I in an industry that, you know, that it's going to be really important in? Am I in an industry that can't conduct business in any other way? Am I in an industry that generally recovers faster and is leading the charge forward? All these things I think you're first and foremost going to need to consider. You know, where am I? Where's my target audience sitting at this point? And am I going to have the opportunity to, again, engage in the same way that I had been engaging? And you're going to have to make some assumptions and take some guesses and talk to some people in your industry and get a feel for where they are. So I think that's first and foremost. Second is you're going to need to consider, even if we do go back to operating in some level of normalcy, you know, do I need to think about reducing my cost of sale? Do I need to think about applying a more metrics-driven approach to my overall sales organization? Do I need to think about how to utilize tools that are geared to deal with people in a non-face-to-face manner more effectively? And if all those things are true, then I need people internally who not only know how to do it, but are excited about doing it, right? I mean, it's very difficult, I think, for the most part, to pull somebody out of a 20-year field. And I'm not saying this doesn't happen. So if you're a 20-year field rep and you're listening to this, again, I know you can do it if you want to, but I find very few 20-year field sales reps that want to be pulled back in between, you know, the walls of an organization and sit, you know, in a bullpen somewhere and engage with clients remotely at this point. So I think you need to think through the idea, can I pull some resources back in? Chances are most of those senior level people are not going to be a good fit to do that. So I may need to rethink my overall hiring strategy and the types of sales reps that I bring into my organization, both today and in the future, if I know I want to be driving a lot more business through non-direct interactions. So I really need to think through my strategy. I need to go back and look at my sales plan. I need to go look at my sales staffing plan. And I need to make sure that sales staffing plan has a fair amount of focus on remote selling. And again, I won't call it inside sales rep. I won't call it SDR. I won't call it, but you know, remote selling. How do I look at dust off that sales plan and make sure that that sales plan has a component of remote selling that that is now prevalent in that plan?
That's great advice. I'll add one simple thing to that, and then we will wrap today because this has been really great, I think, for folks.
Good.
The one the one aggregate that I'll add is you're going to make sure you have somebody with from systems or IT software technology on the Rolodex. You need to be able to quantify and measure, and usually you can't do that just with the habits of folks. So if you don't have a CRM or your CRM's not set up right, don't assume that it can't happen. You have to set it up so that it can. There are so many technologies today that are out there. Some are really expensive. Some are pretty lightweight. But at the end of the day, if you're going to move towards remote selling, you're absolutely going to need some sort of technologist to help you make that transition if you're not there today.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think getting somebody who has an understanding of your workflow, who can talk to your workflow, who can translate that into technology, and I think most people can't do that effectively. So you see a lot of people going out and just buying technology because they hear about it and they think that their sales reps can apply it effectively. I think it's a bad assumption. I think most of the time sales reps do not apply technology effectively. And it requires a whole lot of effort by many different people in the organization to make sure that. So I'd rather have a lot fewer technologies, well-defined, well-outlined, with very good business workflow that my teams can use versus a lot of technologies that almost nobody picks up. So yeah, absolutely, to your point. Sales teams will buck against any technology trend if you just present it to them as a piece of technology. Most of them will not use it effectively. So yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah, to our point earlier, path of least resistance and change creates resistance. So
absolutely.
Hey, Neil, it's been wonderful to have you on the show today. For those who don't know how to get a hold of you, why don't you share with us a little bit your contact information and we'll wrap up.
Sure. You can certainly search for me, Neil.Benedict, first name N-E-A-L, .Benedict at Sandler.com is my email. Sorry, I was going to give you my LinkedIn address, but I don't recall it exactly. But you can search me LinkedIn, Neil Benedict at LinkedIn. You'll find me related to Sandler. I'm based in Houston, of course. So feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Or if you want to give me a call directed, let's just say you're listening to this and you say, man, I got a question for that guy, give me a call at 281-771-2876. Or if you want to scream at me about something I got wrong, feel free to call me on that as well.
Always invite dialogue in there, right, Neil?
Yeah, absolutely. Love to have the conversation.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again for being here today. It's been our pleasure. This has been Summit Podcast with Kyle Hamer and Neil Benedict talking about the strange world of field sales in the coming months of what's going to happen. Tune in next week as we uncover another business truth in making everybody better.